if you inherit this ancient historical castle, you can't just leave it exactly as it was built centuries ago. I mean, the stone walls are magnificent, sure, but living there without electricity or, plumbing.
Yeah, that is definitely not going to work.
Right. You have to wire it for Wi-Fi and put in fire escapes, but without destroying the original architecture. And that is actually the exact challenge South Africa faced in 2003. Like, how do you wire centuries-old tribal royalty into a modern constitutional democracy?
It is a massive structural challenge because, you as a listener might wonder how bloodline royalty and tribal customs can possibly operate inside a 21st century democracy without just constant constitutional crises.
Exactly. And so for this deep dive, our mission is to look at the literal blueprint for that balancing act. We're looking at the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act in 2003, along with its 2009 amendment.
Yeah, and this act lays out the exact rules of engagement.
So to understand how this actually works on the ground, we kind of have to look at the power dynamics first. Because the act legally recognizes kings, queens, principal leaders, and headmen.
Right, which are the local chiefs and elders who manage daily community affairs in rural areas. So things like land allocation or minor disputes under customary law.
Right, but that state recognition comes with a pretty massive catch, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The state essentially says, we see you, we validate your authority, but your customary law must adapt to the Constitution's Bill of Rights.
So they can't just do whatever they want anymore.
No, not at all. They specifically targeted gender equality and non-discrimination. The act explicitly requires traditional councils to be comprised of at least one-third women.
Wait, a strict one-third women quota.
Yes. And on top of that, 40% of the members on these councils must be democratically elected.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. Plus, forcing elections. How on earth did the state get deeply entrenched, historically patriarchal royal lineages to just agree to that without causing a total revolt?
Well, the leverage is state recognition and resources.
Both of them comes down to money.
Essentially, yeah. If a traditional council refuses to meet these democratic quotas, they risk losing their official recognition from the government. And with that loss goes state funding, administrative support, and the legal validity of their local decisions.
Wow. So the act essentially treats traditional leaders almost like franchisees of a corporate brand.
That is actually a really good way to look at it.
Ah, so they have local authority and their own distinct cultural flavor. But if they violate the parent company's core values, in this case, the National Constitution, they just lose their license to operate.
Exactly. It's mandated evolution. The state legally decided that human rights supersede divine right. By forcing these councils to democratize, the act ensures these ancient institutions survive, by aligning them with modern values rather than just letting them become obsolete.
But evolution usually involves some serious growing pains. Like, what happens when a traditional leader just outright refuses to adapt or breaks these new rules? Because reading through the sources, I saw the state can actually fire a king, which just sounds like an oxymoron.
It really does sound like one, but the act formalizes it. A royal leader can be legally removed for physical or mental incapacity, wrongful appointment, or, and this is a big one, a criminal conviction that results in over 12 months of imprisonment without the option of a fine.
That is wild. There's no absolute immunity at all.
None. And they also have a very strict code of conduct now. They have to disclose gifts they receive, and neither the leaders nor their councils can use their resources to promote any political party.
Right, I saw that. The government even established a specific commission on traditional leadership disputes and claims just to handle messy royal succession battles objectively. But I have to push back here for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
If a king can be ousted for a criminal conviction, has to declare his gifts, and has to stay totally out of party politics, doesn't that just make him a glorified civil servant? Like, doesn't that strip away the mystique of royalty?
That tension is actually the entire point of the act. I mean, it demands accountability without erasing their customary duty.
Okay, so they still have real influence.
Oh, absolutely. These leaders still administer community affairs, resolve local disputes, and perform deeply significant ceremonial roles that bind their communities together. So they are highly regulated, hybrid leaders. They keep their cultural authority, but they are firmly confined within the guardrails of a democratic state.
So tradition is no longer a valid excuse for inequality or corruption, which really makes this act such a brilliant bridge. It proves that customary law in a modern constitutional democracy don't actually have to be enemies.
Right. They can operate in tandem, provided they are bound by a clear democratic framework. But it requires compromise from both sides.
Yeah, the state accommodates ancestral traditions, and the traditional leaders accommodate human rights. It's fascinating. It shows that ancient systems can actually carry the weight of modern progress.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, think about the informal or legacy power structures in your own life or industry. I mean, if ancient royal lineages can be successfully updated with modern codes of conduct and democratic quotas, what other traditional hierarchies could benefit from a 21st century rewrite? Maybe it is time to retrofit a few more castles.